Back to Right Hook Radio. Steve Hook with you. And we are once again very happy and honored to welcome back to the program John Lott. Of course, John is the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. He also is author of the book More Guns, Less Crime, and we welcome him to the program. Hello, Mr. Lott. How are you, sir?
Doing okay. How about yourself?
Well, I'm doing okay, and I would wager that you've been getting an awful lot of requests for interviews after the Parkland school shooting, as is probably often the case with you. And I'm just curious as to what your take on the whole thing is, I mean, other than the obvious, and how we can prevent this kind of tragedy going forward.
Well, I guess I'm just extremely frustrated and depressed. Within an hour or two after the attack, we had politicians rushing and gun control advocates rushing to microphones going and calling for more gun control regulation. And the thing that depresses me is that the types of regulations that they longed for wouldn't have had anything to do with stopping this attack. So you have, you have people going and calling for background checks on private transfers of guns. You know, it's something that former President Obama called for after each of the mass public shootings that occurred during his presidency. But there's not one attack this century that would have been stopped if that type of law had been in effect. You have people like Senator Nelson from Florida going and talking about terror watch list denials. Well, he not only mischaracterized what the whole debate was. The whole debate was over or not whether there'd be judicial review of some unnamed bureaucrat putting people's names on the list, often that have nothing to do with terror.
Right.
The Republicans wanted to have judicial review, and the Democrats just wanted to let the bureaucrats be able to put the names on. But what does it have to do with this? What does it have to do with any attack this century? They go forward and they put these rules forward, I think, for other reasons other than what, they claim.
What do you think those reasons are, Mr. Lott?
Something they can do, but they won't talk about it.
Well, what?
So these gun-free zones. We have another attack, yet another attack in a gun-free zone.
Yeah.
I don't know how many statements we have from these killers that go and explain why they picked the targets that they did, where they say, I didn't think anybody would be able to stop me for a while. I mean, we have incredibly explicit statements from some of these killers about why they do it. You have over 98% of the mass public shootings since 1950 have occurred in places where general citizens aren't allowed to defend themselves. All the attacks in Florida, whether it be the Hialeah restaurant one, the Orlando Pulse nightclub attack, the RV business center that was there,
right,
or the Fort Lauderdale airport, every single one of those, including the one this last week, occurred in places where we had gun bans.
As
if the gun ban was supposed to make them safer. And instead, these serve as magnets because these killers like to go to places where they know that they can kill or maim a lot of people before anybody can show up to stop them. And I just don't, there's like no serious discussion on something like that. Instead, we have everybody calling for gun control laws that have nothing to do with it. And then we have all these gun control advocates going out and saying, people like myself or others have blood on their hands because they're not supporting their laws that they want to put forward that have nothing to do with stopping the attack.
Yeah, it is frustrating. And when you see, we're speaking with John Lott. And John, when you see the FBI, and we talked about this earlier, how since 9/11, the four words that we have heard over and over again from the officials is "see something, say something." Well, a lot of people saw something, and a lot of people said something about this Nicholas Cruz fella, and it seems to me that those words fell on deaf ears.
So here's the issue. people always seem to think that you're going to be able to stop these guys before they do something. It'd be nice, but it's not going to happen lots of times. And the question that you have is, what's your backup plan? And that's the thing they refuse to talk about. You know, but the only thing that can happen is, you know, they'll say, well, you know, you can put an armed guard there. The gun control groups even fought against that, I guess maybe because it was an NRA suggestion. But I disagree with the NRA on this. I mean, putting somebody in uniform in a school, it may make you feel better, but it's an impossible job. You put somebody in uniform there, it's kind of like putting somebody with a neon sign above them that says, shoot me first.
Yeah.
One,
yeah.
It's an incredibly boring job, okay? You know, to be on your toes day after day, month after month, year after year there, when the likelihood that anything's going to happen in the 100,000 public schools that we have in the country is like zero, essentially. But, you know, if it does happen, you want somebody to respond. And, you know, what I just mentioned as an aside, with the Air Marshal Program, the people just quit that job all the time. You know, like, they'll be there for 4 months before they get too bored flying around, just sitting in a seat in an airplane.
Right. So there's a big turnover.
Huge turnover. And I imagine you'd have the same thing if you were to put, you know, for people that have to be a police officer at a school.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, you know, you're police officer at an elementary school. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Well,
what's the guy going to be doing all the time?
So in other words, your point is that, for one, he becomes he or she, whoever is there in uniform, becomes an immediate target, first kill. And secondly, they probably won't last in the job long because they're going to be bored stiff and quit. And it's not really an effective means of protecting the kids in school if that's your only avenue. I was reading an article, John, in Town Hall, concerning how Israel dealt with this. And I think that this is probably along the lines that you're saying. In 1974, Israel endured the Mar-a-Lot massacre, in which a Palestinian terrorist took 115 people hostage in an elementary school. 22 kids and 3 others were killed. 68 were injured. Since that time, Israel has basically armed the staff of the schools. There have been 2 school shootings since that horrific day in 1974, and in both cases, the suspect was taken out by an armed administrative staff or teacher at that school. Only 2 times, and both times the perp was put down without any other loss of life. Is that what you're advocating here, something along those lines?
No, that's exactly right. Look, you already have staff and teachers there at the school. You know, and there are a number of states that allow this. I mean, that discussion sounds like it's taken from my book, The Bias Against Guns. I mean, I wrote about this, 15 years ago. And, you know, people say, well, you know, what about somebody carrying guns? The thing is, we have like 17 million concealed carry permit holders in this country. You're in New Jersey, but if you were to go across the river into Pennsylvania, there's like 1.3 million permit holders in Pennsylvania. You know, you go to a movie theater, you go to a restaurant, you go to a mall. They're there.
Yeah.
They're all over the place, but you would never know. And there's no reason why you should. In fact, that's the benefit of not knowing who's carrying there.
Yeah, and you never hear these stories of these people had a concealed carry weapon and he went in and mowed down a bunch of kids. You never hear those stories. That's not the ones doing this.
Well, those don't happen. But what happens is you also don't hear about all the mass public shootings that are stopped by concealed carry permit holders. If you go to our website at crimeresearch.org, in the left column we have a bunch of little tabs that you can do, and we have, you know, concealed carry permit holders who have stopped mass public shootings. There are dozens of cases in just the last few years of permit holders who are stopping one. There was just a recent one in Florida, where a man was attacking a car repair place that was filled, packed with people, and there were 2 permit holders that stopped him. But they're dramatic cases that occur all the time, and they only get, like, local media coverage.
Right.
And You know, I mean, there's even cases where there's been film of heroic actions by a permit holder saving people's lives. And I haven't been able to get national media outlets to cover it because editors will say, well, you know, it just would be political for us to do this. Well, I guarantee you, if the permit holders weren't there and many people had been killed, it would have been all over the national and international news. But the fact that even once in a while they refused to cover these cases where many lives were saved. I mean, I'm talking about cases that we have on our website where police, where sheriffs or prosecutors have said many lives were saved as a result of the permit holder.
Yet you never hear Don Lemon or Chris Cuomo or anybody on CNN, this just in, special report, hero with a gun stops a massacre. You're never going to hear those stories.
You're not going to hear them at all. And it has a huge effect on people's perceptions about the costs and benefits of guns.
And that's the point.
And the other thing is, and people can go to our website, as they say, we have a list of them. There are links to the original news articles. Again, they're all in local newspapers or local TV because there's no national ones to click on for that. But, you know, it has a real impact on the debate when people constantly hear only about bad things that happen, never hear about the benefits. But I tell you, this gun control debate that we have would be so dramatically different if there was just a couple little things that the media did differently. One of them is, when we have another one of these mass public shootings and it occurs in a place where guns are banned, why not mention that? Why not say we've had yet another attack, or just say we've had an attack where guns are banned? Even if only a quarter of the stories where they cover would say that, people say, geez, I think I've heard that before or something. You know,
how often
does this happen? Instead, they go and do things that they often get wrong about, well, what type of gun was used or how did he obtain the gun, and then they have to correct that a couple days later. Finding out whether or not the attack occurred in a place where guns are banned is like the easiest thing for them to check. And so, you know, either you have by law it's banned or you'll have it posted outside. And so even if you can't get near the facility, if you have like a pair of binoculars, you can go and see whether or not they have posted signs or not.
Well, you
know for sure whether that's the case, but they refuse to cover it. I can't tell you how many times I've talked to editors and say, well, if we were to put that in the story, it would be political. And I say, how is that any more or less political than you talking about background checks or something else here?
It's not, because it doesn't move their narrative. I asked a listener in the first hour, John Lott, he called up and we were talking maybe in the second hour, and I said, I asked him a simple question, and that is, what do you think is more of a deterrent, a sign that says, be forewarned, our staff and administrators are armed, and anybody that comes in with a gun may be shot, deadly force, use of deadly force if necessary. If you see that sign, or then the sign next to it that says, this is a gun-free zone. I think we just lost John Lott. I think we just lost him. Oh, well. Maybe he'll call back. But the point is, and John's right on that, the media will always ignore those stories. So while John was talking to me, I clicked on his site. And it's a good site, crimeresearch.org. You really ought to check it out, because he's got a list of all of the times that a gun owner, concealed carry more often than not, that a gun owner stopped a crime. And yet the media will not touch that story. They won't go near it. It diverts from their narrative, and they don't want to divert from the narrative. They don't want to show somebody that is a hero for using a gun, because, then we're kind of giving the imprimatur that that the guns are good, and we don't want to do that. No, guns are bad. Nobody should have guns. We shouldn't have a Second Amendment anymore. I advise all of those people that think this way. The Second Amendment is the Second Amendment for a very important reason, namely because it protects the First Amendment, and it protects the Third Amendment, and the Fourth Amendment, and the Fifth, Sixth, Seventh, Eighth. It protects all of them. The Second Amendment was made the Second Amendment for that reason. You want freedom of speech? Fine. You want to, and like I said, the argument of, well, you know, the founders did not have AR-15s. The founders didn't have Bushmasters. The founder did. No, they had the most advanced technological weaponry of their day. And that's why they wrote this. They said, listen, everybody should be able. I'm not saying you should be able to go out and buy a grenade launcher or a tank. Come on. Common sense. You know, we understand that. But the media paint this picture of the AR-15, and they always say these words. They always say assault rifle. Ladies and gentlemen, I can tell you that if you take a 18th century musket, you load it with a muzzle loader musket, and you use it to kill somebody, that weapon has just become an assault weapon, right? By definition. So that's just a phony argument. I think we've got John Lott back. Hello, John, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, sorry. I was just talking about the knee-jerk reaction of the media to always attack the gun, and they always use the words assault rifle. Well, I would think that if you killed somebody with a dull butter knife, that's an assault weapon too. I mean, it's just such a stupid narrative that they always try and pull, and they never ever cover the stories that you're referring to. How do you think that politicians are going to respond to this particular shooting? I mean, now that we know the FBI dropped the ball, and how do we prevent it if they're not willing to listen to people like you?
Well, if they're not willing to listen to me, I suppose we'll just keep doing the same stuff. But my guess is, they're going to push for more gun control type regulations. I mean, I've really come to the point to believe that the reason why they push for these rules is just to make it more difficult for people to own guns and reduce gun ownership. The number one thing that they keep pushing for is these background checks on private transfers of guns. And as we've mentioned, if they'd gotten it, it wouldn't have stopped one single mass public shooting this century.
Yeah.
But what it does do is it makes it more costly for people to go and get guns. And I've come, unfortunately, to believe that that's the real reason why they do it. I've talked to gun control advocates for 18 years about this. I said, look, if you want to pass these so-called universal background checks on private transfers, you could pass it today. You just had to make a few, what I would call, reasonable changes to the law. One is they have to deal with the false positives. You know, when they go and they say there are 3 million dangerous or prohibited people that have been denied from buying guns because of background checks, that's just a lie. What they should say is that there have been 3 million denials, and virtually all of those have been mistakes. Virtually all of them have been the wrong person. It's one thing to deny somebody who is a felon. It's another thing to deny somebody who simply has a name similar to a felon from being able to go and buy a gun. Now, that could be easily fixed. If private companies do criminal background checks, if they had an error rate that was 100th, the error rate that the federal government has, under federal law, those private companies would be sued out of existence.
Wow.
All you have to do is have the government have to obey the same rules for background checks that the government requires that private companies have to in terms of how they do the checking. That's all you have to do. The other thing is the cost. I don't know what it costs in New Jersey off the top of my head, but if you do a background check on a private transfer of a gun, it's in New York City, it's $125 at least. Now, you have a cost on all the background checks. You don't see it. It's not like a sales tax that they get the cost on top of. You only see it with the private transfers because that's the only service that they're providing at that time.
Right.
In some states it's as low as $55, but whether it's $55 or $125, that's a real cost for many people. It may not stop you or I from being able to go and get a gun, but a poor person, particularly the type of people that I think need guns the most for protection, poor people, poor minorities who live in high-crime urban areas, $125 or $100 can make a real difference whether or not they're going to be able to afford the gun or not.
Right.
And I should mention the false positive, the mistakes that I first mentioned there. It's overwhelmingly blacks and Hispanics that are stopped in those mistakes.
Yeah.
And so you know, and I say to them, okay, the first fix is trivial. Just have the government have the same rules that the government imposes on everybody else. And the second one is, if you believe background checks reduce crime, and I don't, but if you do believe that, then what you do is it benefits everybody, and you should have everybody pay for it then, rather than make the entire cost be borne by the law-abiding citizen who's going out of their way to have a background check on the guns that they're getting.
Well,
Democrats will fight tooth and nail. They'll go nuts fighting against you on either of those changes. And that just suggests to me over time, as I've run into this time after time, that, look, they could have this. Who can argue against trying to fix these types of mistakes? And yet, I've come to believe that they actually view this as a feature, that 3 million people have been falsely stopped from buying a gun.
Yeah, they look at it as that's 3 million guns off the street. That's the way they look at it. It's rather absurd. Now, I want to ask you real quick before I let you go, John Lott. President Trump has been coming under withering attack from the media that are completely kind of blowing this story completely out of proportion about him doing away with the Obama era regulation on mental health that Obama signed December 16th, 1 month and 4 days before Trump took office. And they have completely misrepresented that. Can you explain that?
It's a complete and utter lie. What happened was, at the end of the Obama administration, they put forth this rule for Social Security recipients who would get help on their finances. That would make it so that the Social Security Administration would report those people's names to the next system as being mentally having mental illness. And my mom, for example, she's late 80s. She hates to use computers, all right? And so she's given power of attorney to my sister to go and handle paying her bills and stuff like that. Well, under that definition, my mom would be one of the 4.2 million Social Security recipients who would be classified as mentally disabled and not able to go and own a gun. Just because my mom wants my sister to help handle her finances doesn't even mean my mom is incapable of being able to make a decision whether or not to protect her life. And, you know, it's just like two completely different issues there. Trump...
Go ahead.
You know, and it's not just that. They've taken away gun ownership from, like, 600,000 vets using the same type of rule. They weren't able to overturn that one yet because the Democrats, there are two different rules since the Obama administration had just put this one for Social Security recipients in effect. You have Congress has like a 60-day window in order to overturn that, and so they were able to overturn that. But the veterans rule, which went into effect about 7 years ago or 8 years ago now, that one, they weren't able to overturn because the window had passed on that. They'd have to pass a new law, and the Democrats, including both the Democratic senators from New Jersey, filibuster this and won't let them overturn it. So you have some military vet who may be 80 or 75, and he has somebody else handle his finances. Well, why does that mean that vet is not competent to be able to go and... defend his life.
Yeah, it's absolutely absurd. And in an ironic twist of fate, the ACLU was on Trump's side on this. Yet the media never, ever mentions that. It's just...
they just call it mental illness and don't define or don't explain to people what is meant in this case by mental illness. And it's just, I would hope most people would be outraged if they actually heard the way it was defined. But it's just an example. They want, they misstate what it is, and they are just trying to adopt different rules to disarm. In this case, for Social Security, 4.2 million older people who receive Social Security benefits would be it'd be illegal for them to own guns.
It's absurd. It's absurd. Well, Dr. John Lott, as always, you're a wealth of knowledge, and we thank you so much for taking some time out.